Hey, I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Myrtle's got her little bee, and she's sitting here, you know, upset that I'm podcasting. My dog is upset that my attention isn't on her. Awesome episode today with Bobby Moynihan, who I've been a fan of for a long time, and I'm a bigger fan of after hanging out with him on my couch. The guy fucking rules, and he's hilarious. I am on the road. The Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour still pushes on a couple more months before it's over. All the tickets are announced at dansoder.com. This week, 9 o'clock show, Schubert, Boston, March 6th. There is a late show. Tickets are still available, dansoder.com. If you live in the Massachusetts area, Philadelphia, I believe you're sold out. There could be a couple loose tickets around, but go to dansoder.com. Also, if you we're going to be in Dallas, Houston, and Oklahoma City soon, Charlotte and Durham, you're up soon. DanSoder.com. Go get tickets, and I'll see you on tour. Myrtle will be there in Boston and Philadelphia, but not in Dallas, Houston, or Oklahoma City. I'm sorry, it's too far to drive with her. But the other one, you know, you get it. We'll see you on the road, and enjoy the episode. I try not to talk over him too much. I really did try not to talk over him. I get excited. I just get really excited, dude. Thirty Rock's one of my favorite shows of all time.
Amazing.
I think I've probably watched it 9 or 10 times front to back.
Yeah.
And the thing I've learned about being a stand-up comedian in New York City and bumping into Tracy Morgan is that they nailed... Tracy Jordan...
There's no difference.
Yeah. And then the new show coming out, I was like... it was the same crew as 30 Rock and you. And I was like, this has got to be awesome.
Very lucky boy. Yeah, it's nuts. It's absolutely... And Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, and Daniel Radcliffe. Yeah. Was there ever a moment where he was Tracy Morgan and you guys did like the look to each other like, oh...
I have a file on my phone, a notes file on my phone with like 1,500 different things Tracy has just said.
Yeah. That's just incredible.
Like, yeah, me and
Daniel.
Can
you bust out some? Yeah.
Me and Daniel just like he'll say something and I'll just see like a crowd of people and I'll just see Daniel going looking like he's just looking for me to see if I am typing.
Yeah.
Because we have a vast.
Yeah.
We have a vast.
He doesn't list. Stop with sound bites.
No, I think one thing that Tracy knows about himself is that if he says something insane, it will get a laugh, and yeah. That is like a superpower of his. Like one of people want to see him say crazy. When the very first thing when I saw him in person was he hosted SNL and Lauren's door opened. Because it was like a cartoon. Lauren's door opened and he was just standing in the middle of the room with his arms like this, and he went, "The dark horse has returned." Yeah, no one in the world gets away with that besides Tracy Morgan. Like that kind of an entrance as a human.
Yeah.
And
I don't think there is a person on earth who makes a crazier first impression with anybody.
Well, talking to Tracy, you immediately understand the sentence of like, Lauren saw something and that something works.
And it absolutely works. It's like, hilarious.
One of
the first times I ever saw him in person was right when I moved to New York. There used to be a Laugh Factory in Times Square, and I was doing check spots. So I was like doing the shittiest spot on the show, not doing well, wanted to go outside and smoke a cigarette on 8th Avenue because I just bombed. And I swear to God, this is 100% true. I'm standing 8th Avenue, right by Port Authority. It's one of the busiest avenues in New York City. Smoking a cigarette, and I just hear, it's a yellow Lamborghini, and it pulls up, and all I hear is, "Yeah, I'll take a picture with you." And it's Tracy Morgan on 8th Avenue gets
you say
out
it's
of
Andre
his...
the Giant?
No, yeah. But he gets out and takes... He still had his low jack on, so he wasn't driving. And he goes, "I can't drive because of the low jack, but I'll take a picture with you." And he's standing there on 8th Avenue, and people are coming up just taking photos. And then they went, "Are you doing a show up here?" He didn't even realize he pulled over in front of a comedy club. he looked up and went, "No," and then left.
You'd be surprised how many people have stories about him hanging out of a car and screaming something at them. It's truly like everyone is like, I was on the street and he was hanging out of a car, and it's always the same thing. He was always like in a vehicle hanging out of it. But also the best thing, like the only way to explain knowing Tracy Morgan is this. Shooting in Westchester County, my hometown, literally my hometown. We're shooting in my hometown where I grew up. And a woman comes running over as we're shooting and goes, "Tracy, Tracy." We're in the middle of a take. We're outside. We're at like a deli in White Plains. Yeah. And I used to work at White Plains. I worked at the Pizzeria Uno on Central Avenue.
Go check it out.
Yeah,
go pick up a pizza and say you know Bobby.
Fantastic.
Really mess him up.
And a woman comes running over in the middle of a take and goes, "Tracy, Tracy," and everyone's mad and goes like, "Cut." And he goes, "It's okay. This is Jerry Seinfeld's wife." It was not Jerry Seinfeld's wife.
He just makes up credits for people.
It was a woman from Westchester.
No, that's Dom DeLuise.
That's Jerry Seinfeld's wife. He gave her a hug. She was like, "Tracy." He was like, "It's so good to see you." She was like, I don't know. Like, she was trying to explain to him that it wasn't him. That wasn't her. It's just perfect.
That might be the most brilliant move of all time, which is to out crazy someone who's crazy. So they come at you and you just go, "That is her." And they
she
go,
tried to explain to him that she was not, in fact, Jerry Seinfeld's wife. She was just a fan, but she bailed halfway through and was just like, "Everything's great. I'm just happy to meet you."
He's leaving. "Say hi to George Costanza." Because that's not a real person, Tracy. Yeah. He came
yes,
into
the, it is. Yeah. Another great one was just standing there and he goes, "You know, I used to date Michelle Obama back in high school."
And this is why you guys are just doing a tape.
Or like, "Tracy, do you know Morgan Freeman?" He's like, "Yeah, I know Morgan Freeman." And then his assistant goes, "He doesn't know."
Is that the most overworked assistant in Hollywood? Is that guy going around going, "He actually never dated Michelle Obama"?
I often ask him, I'm like, "So what was your last night like?"
Yeah.
Like just out of curiosity. He's the best. Tracy's insane, but in the best way
it's so funny.
Possible. He's like a gigantic beating heart who's just throwing out fun. It's the way to live.
I've never witnessed his crazy and it hasn't been funny.
Correct. And just, I saw this sentence this morning. It was either Robert or Tina. Somebody asked Robert or Tina what it was about Tracy.
Yeah.
And it was the best sentence. I went like, that's it. He's just so happy to be alive. And it's true.
Everybody
needs that. Completely true. He's just like every moment is he just everything goes through the filter of like, but what if I was also playing a boombox right now?
He came in to the Comedy Cellar on a Sunday night, probably around it's Sunday night, so it's dead. It's like 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And he just comes in the Olive Tree Cafe, takes his shirt off and goes, "I'm buying everybody drinks. I just found out Roberto Clemente's my biological father." And then he slapped his belly. He just kept.
15 of the 1,500 things end with the things, "Is my biological father."
It was great.
A lot of people are his biological father. Barack Obama was his biological father.
Like, mathematically impossible. Tracy, I couldn't have been your father. We're the same age.
He often says Flip Wilson is his biological father. Great. You do a fantastic Flip Wilson.
Flip. You queued me up for a flip. But because when that happened, when I was.
But he also claims, he goes, "Flip Wilson died with no money." And I don't know if that's true.
The Wilson family's like, he was notoriously a good investor. He actually invested
charitable
in Apple.
Man.
Charitable. He's got libraries. Can you look up
he
how
died
much money
in a pile of cash? Yeah.
He was.
He's also not dead. No.
They based Scrooge McDuck on Flip Wilson swimming through his money. Yeah, the biological father thing is just like it's like a setup.
He knows if he says he's great at being Tracy Morgan.
Because the belly slap to me was what sold it for me. Because he said it, but then he did, like no one was listening. Like he just said it for the room and then he just went like that on his belly.
Because that's what made his mom laugh when he was a kid.
Yeah, just a belly slap.
And that's it. That's it. And he just knows it and he just still does it because he's the best.
That's why I always, one of my favorite 30 Rock episodes is where they're doing the boys and Girls Club commercial, and they have to do the skateboarding and everything, and then the guy, they're like filming it all day because Tracy's like, oh, I'm supposed to go now? And the guy's like, ah, it's just so perfect.
I shouldn't admit this in a podcast, but I kill people? No, I'm just kidding.
I go, you know what? We'll do some editing. I go out there. I'm like, Bobby said some stuff that I'm not really comfortable with.
No, ever since the show has come out online, like the last couple days, I have watched it a couple times.
Yeah.
But mostly because, like, Tracy's just line readings are so, like, insane and bizarre. Like, it's like there's only one person that can read them that way. Or, like, he'll just add... He does this thing with Daniel. It's not in the script. I don't think it's in the script. Robert and Tina are brilliant. I don't think it's in the script. But he does this thing with Daniel where, like, Daniel will say something, and he'll just, like... Instead of saying, like, calm down, he'll go, calm down, dude. And he'll just call him dude, but like every dude gets like a little bit longer and more. Yeah. So he'll be like, dude. And it's just, it's killing me. Even the way he speaks, he just throws so much Tracy into it.
I mean, to put together that team for the rise and fall of, and what I love about
the fall and rise.
Okay.
I have to remind myself.
The fall and rise.
It's the fall and rise of Reggie Dinkins. Reminding myself too.
Because when I heard they were making it, I think every 30 Rock fan was like, what? And then adding you and Daniel Radcliffe, and we're like, what? It was great.
It's nuts.
I haven't watched the first episode because I want to watch the full season 30 Rock style.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
I'm telling you, like the way that I because 30 Rock, just, I think unfairly.
Could you just play them and then leave the room right now?
I'm
going to
do
me?
That six times.
Yeah. Okay.
Go. Oh, I'm going to stream it on my phone. You're going to, if you came in here, it'd be like a boiler room. There's no furniture. It's just a bunch of phones set up.
I have a Reggie Dinkins farm in my, yeah, going on. And
I have a bot farm. Yeah. Imagine setting that up and being like, go.
All right. Season two, here we come.
God, we're getting greenlit. We're going to greenlit for six.
You're not going to believe this. We had 33 billion viewers.
Bobby. We're getting like a Lucasfilm deal. They're buying a whole universe. There's a Reggie Dinkins universe.
Action figures coming out. We have a video game.
Was that like a cool moment where you're like, I get to play like... you're playing essentially his best friend from the NFL.
Yes, we were former teammates. Right? I was the kicker. We've been best friends since childhood. Since we were on the team together. And I live in his basement now. Yeah, I run his social media.
Did Tracy ever call Daniel Radcliffe Harry Potter?
Yeah,
I'm wondering. The reason I asked that question is, how do you curve that? How do you go, Tracy?
It's
in
so
this world,
hard.
He's not Harry Potter.
It's so weird because, like, I come from a world where it's like we talk about SNL a lot, no matter what. And it always comes back to SNL. But with him, it comes back to Harry Potter. Like, what I do is I like to count how much time I'm with Daniel before it comes up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because, like, sometimes it's like 10 seconds.
Sure.
Sometimes it's a day, but it's like it always comes up.
Yeah, it's almost like a condition. Where you're like, my Harry Potter's flaring up.
Well, like, yeah, there's like three people in the world, I feel like, that have to deal with what he has to deal with. It's like him, Mark Hamill.
Yes.
Like, there's a couple people that are real life wizard superheroes.
Yeah, I would also probably.
But like Mark Hamill's face is not. I went to the mall recently with my daughter, and every single store we went into, I saw his face on something. Yeah.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes.
Yeah, because
Mark Hamill. Hamill
is everywhere.
Well, I mean, like he kind of is, but like Harry Potter more so. Like
Harry Potter is it is a younger generation Star Wars.
Correct.
Basically, Harry Potter, the entire franchise, took the page from Star Wars and was like, oh, we'll just do this with wizards.
I never noticed that before.
And they just go like, oh yeah, put the merch. But there were no Star, there's a Harry Potter store. There was never like a Star
There's a
Wars.
Harry Potter land. Yeah.
There's like an
quickly.
Amusement park.
But
it's so much bigger.
You immediately realize how amazing his parents are or must be because he is just such a, I go home like, man, he's just deals with everything wonderfully.
It really is amazing. It's almost like when you see these World War II veterans that you're like, and you're just a normal guy, and they go, yep.
Yeah.
Came back, fought the Nazis, and then I started a family, and you go, no PTSD.
Yeah.
Like none. You were in the, that's my
I want to grab him by the shoulders sometimes and go, also, like, relax and be a kid and have some fun. Like, just go do something silly, please.
Let's go run around.
Stop producing amazing things for 1 second.
And go around the grass. Can you be kind of an asshole for a little bit?
Can you, like, spill a bottle of shampoo?
could you do one thing off? Yeah. Could you? I mean, with you with the SNL stuff, when you left, was there a feeling of, like, I don't want to talk about it all the time? Were people, like, bringing it up to you in a way that you're, like, uncomfortable?
I mean, there's still, you always want to navigate this amazingly cool thing that you wanted to be in your whole life. Then you got to go there. It's like going to space camp. And then when you get done, you're like, okay, do I never talk about it again and be cool?
Do you not want me to talk about
it? Or do I talk
space?
About every second of it? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
do you want to know what the food tastes like up there? It tastes so different. It tastes so different. But I think you're a guy who, it like came on, was I mean, I knew about you at UCB when I would go, like, see you do, like, Ass Cat and stuff, and you were phenomenal.
Like, Katie was, like, one of the
first interviews
I ever did.
She was very mad that she was not here. She's at work right now.
Oh,
you were on Garbage Time.
Yeah.
And she was like, tell Bobby that he was the greatest interview I ever had.
But that was also, like, and I think about that, that was also, like, one of the first ones I ever did. Like, it was, like, I remember, like, she was brand new, and I remember going, like, me too. Like, and she was great. She was absolutely wonderful.
And she says that to this day. She was, like, one of my favorite interviews I've ever done.
Yeah, it was a blast.
And she brings that up. She was, like, Garbage Time was new. He didn't need to do it. But I don't think she realizes you were new at SNL, so there was, like, this...
Brand new.
Yeah.
It was definitely... I remember going home and being like, that ain't so bad when you got to do those things. Like...
You know what's funny is she said it like an old friend. She had her keys in her hand today. She was leaving with her purse, and she goes, ask him if his head still gets hot from eating sour candy.
She knows me well.
I went, okay. Almost as her fiance, you go, what? Like, she's saying that, and she's like shuffling her keys in her hand. She goes, ask him if sour candy still makes his head hot. Like, and you go, what is this? And then she leaves to go to work. I'm going
what
to work.
Is,
and you go,
what the? I say things I shouldn't say immediately when I meet people. If I eat anything, like if I have Sour Patch Kids, love Sour Patch Kids.
They're great.
Blueberry Sour Patch Kids, specifically.
Very good.
But if I eat them,
you sweat.
The top of my head down starts here, just starts to, like, I can feel it. Like, I get hot, I start to get a little sweaty. Whenever I have sour candy,
do you have to, like, eat it at home?
My temperature rises from the top starting down. I can't explain it. I can make it happen if you give me sour candy.
You can just go, here we go.
Here we go.
And then, it's
probably some kind of medical condition.
There's a doctor right now that's like, this is on in their office.
Like, don't eat them. And he goes, like, well, it's probably like I'm allergic to some sort of red dye number blank or something.
Oh, and so I just it's don't the blueberry it. Ones that specifically.
No, it's sour candy.
Just in general.
Yeah, anything sour. I love sour candy.
But you do love it.
Yeah.
What a curse.
Yeah, it's like people who are lactose intolerant but still drink milk anyway because dessert's great.
It's great. My friend Daniel K. Isaac, who I did Billions with.
Not a real person.
He's a real person.
No,
look him
kidding.
Up.
I'm just kidding.
Daniel's watching this and goes, I am real. Don't you Rene Descartes me?
Billions does well. No, I'm kidding. I know. I'm just kidding. He's a
but
nice
we would get sometimes one of the bigger actors would get like, hey, I got a Van Leeuwen's truck to come by, and like a cyanide capsule. He would always have a lactate thing, and he'd be like, I'm ready for it, and drop it, and he'd be like, bring on the dairy. And you're like, I get that. Loving something, but it gives you...
Yeah.
Have you ever done Sour Patch Kids in popcorn at the movies?
I'm not an animal.
It's first.
No, I'm just kidding. First. I have done Welcome snow caps and popcorn.
That's fine. It's your weekly reminder that if you have any sort of hypochondria, take ease with ZocDoc. Even if you have anything wrong, maybe you're just a normal person who has something going wrong and you're like, who the hell is going to fix my ankle? I don't know. Go to ZocDoc.com or use the app. I've had the app and I'm gonna be a hipster. I've had the app for way long, since like 2012. But we all know health issues don't follow a 9-to-5 schedule. And with ZocDoc, having a no time to book a doctor's appointment is actually no problem. You don't have any time, you know, well, guess what? just go to ZocDoc. It's a free app and a website that helps you find and book high-quality in-network doctors so you can find someone you love. Whether you're looking for dermatology, dentistry, primary care, eye care, or any of the other 200-plus specialties offered on ZocDoc, you can easily search by specialty or symptom and build the care team that's right for you. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/Soder to find and instantly book a doctor you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/Soder. ZocDoc.com/Soder. Thanks, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this message.
Thank you, Daddy.
Oh, Mac Weldon, you beautiful, comfortable clothing. Listen, sometimes you grow up, but you still want to wear stuff that you wore as a teenager, i.e. the way I've dressed my entire life. Sometimes you want comfortable, but you want elevated. Well, check out MacWeldon.com. They got the Ace line, which is elevated sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts, even blazers. If you're lucky enough to grab one in stock, looks like a blazer, feels like a sweatshirt. How can you not lose? Get lost in comfort with our half zips, pullover hoodies, bomber jackets, and crew necks. Get moving with Mac Weldon. Comfortable anywhere. Go to MacWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code DAN. That's MacWeldon.com, promo code DAN.
I saw this. I saw Sour Patch Kid ice cream at Target once. First of all, at Target. Buying any food at Target.
Yeah, I don't care that you're a grocery store now. That's where I had to buy my knockoff Jenkos in middle school.
I saw Sour Patch Kid ice cream, and I got it just to see what it was. It was lemon-flavored ice cream with Sour Patch Kid. Like, the only way I can explain it is like Sour Patch Kid gel. Like a jelly swirl.
Ew.
That felt like as if they had melted Sour Patch Kids and then squeezed them out.
Which does sound fun.
It was delicious.
It was
good. The gel was delicious, but the ice cream I didn't wasn't so when you, a fan
but,
of.
But I ate
the whole thing and the box and the fork. No, I'm just kidding. Yep.
I wouldn't be a scientist unless I asked you this. Did the ice cream make you... Did the ice cream warm...
Make me sweat as much? No. No, not as much. Now, come to think of it, no, but it might have been because the ice cream was cooling me down at the same time. I might have found my
This is it. This is your kryptonite. Eureka moment. This is where you
go. That's how I got to intake sour stuff is through ice cream.
You go
now
cool
on.
It. Cool it at the greatest temperature we can.
I just have to enjoy my desserts in a walk-in freezer.
Yeah, where's Bobby? You go. Well, the fall and rise.
The pizzeria Uno he used to work at in the closet.
The fall and rise of Reggie Dickens was so successful. He bought his own walk-in cooler strictly for sour stuff. He just eats it in there. But like SNL stuff, I feel like that.
I also have to mention Hoppers too.
Oh, Hoppers looks great. Go check out the new movie Hoppers. If you put my mind inside of a beaver, I wouldn't build a dam. I wouldn't build a dam at all, but Bobby voices the character King George. Mm-hmm. So go check out Hoppers in theaters now.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, and watch the Fall and Rise of Reggie Dinkins on Peacock or NBC. Is it on both?
It's on both.
It's on both. It's, you know how it is, everything.
Watch it on a phone computer.
Phone computer. Watch it right there on a plane, no headphones. Make everybody listen to it. When you left SNL, because I think everybody who's ever been in comedy, mm-hmm. whether you've done SNL or not, SNL gets brought up. Like when you started doing improv, did you have family that just went like, did you ever think about doing SNL?
I think I talked about it so much they already knew. I mean, okay. I used to make my mom make videos. I'm in a suit coming out of my bathroom going, Bobby Moynihan.
No
and
way.
Like turning around. And doing my SNL opening. Like,
was that?
Oh, yeah, I was a lot.
What was that moment? Because you still had Don Pardo. You did. Yeah. I mean, Daryl Hammond does.
I think Sasheer, if I'm a big nerd, I think Sasheer was the last one with Don
Pardo. When he was getting shaky, where he was going, please, well, I can't do this anymore. Lauren, haven't I given you enough?
I have told this story before in interviews, but it's one of my favorite things in the world. He just passed me one day and he went, Bobby Moynihan.
That's all you
like,
want.
Really quietly to himself, and he went, that's a good one. Not like that nightmare Nassim Pedrad.
What?
I just didn't goes, like saying Nassim's name.
He goes, sorry, Don is in, he's sundowning right now. And he goes, I don't
mad one day.
FDR ruined the economy. You go, a lot of hot takes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You go, you know what's funny? Those studio times are about 17 hours because he can't get to the names without opinions. You know who I don't like? The Polish. Like, the Polish? What a fucking weird thing to hate.
Another great one was we were rehearsing a sketch called Rough, Rugged, and Roker, which was the whole premise of the sketch was Kenan Thompson goes straight from like the, Al Roker goes straight from the club because he's so cool from partying to like doing the news in the world.
That's great.
But like right before, he's the coolest dude in the world because he's been up all night partying, and it was absolutely hilarious. But there were a lot of dancers. Never saw Don Pardo on the floor before of the studio. Like he was in his booth.
Sure.
And he was just standing there, and I was like, what are you doing, Don? And he's the dancers. Like, he was just there to see the dancers.
Oh, they're in so much glitter.
But he speaks, like, he would speak that way. He's like, that's the how he dancers. Talks. Like, you know, and it's like, he's like, just,
he was just like, remember the...
It was as if they were musical guests, he said it.
Featuring the sexy dancers.
I'm here to look at women.
I'm gonna oogle. You remember the homeless guy with the golden voice? Do you remember there was like a homeless guy on the thing? And they
Cleveland.
And it was like one of the first viral things where he went like really viral and they got him a job.
Kraft macaroni and cheese, right?
And then he'd be like, this is coming in. And they'd be like, give him, like, he'd be like, can you get a dollar? And they'd be like, do it. And he'd be like, coming up on the, and it was like,
do it.
And then he got too much money and you go, oh.
Yeah. He was, I believe, homeless again shortly after. Yes. Yeah.
He made a lot of money and then he made a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if Lorne just found Don Pardo like that, like just walking around and he's like,
I don't think so. I think he was in the building when they built it and he just,
I can't leave.
It's like with him and Toscanini's music stand, which was in a case right next to it. Like he would be like, I was here when they built it. Like, no joke.
Seriously?
Yes.
Wait,
not doing a bit. He was like, when they would do my show of shows.
He's the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
He's just like out there playing the organ.
He really was. It was crazy. It's like, yeah.
Because he did it until he was in his 90s, like late 90s.
He was 6,712. Yeah. When
I'm an oracle.
Yeah, no, he felt magical.
He's Merlin.
Yeah.
We find out that's who Merlin's based off of.
I did get locked. It almost missed a cue on live television while I was dressed as Cogsworth from the clock from Beauty and the Beast. Because Don Pardo fell asleep in the booth and I couldn't get the door open because I was like a clock and he was in the way and I didn't want to like wake him up. Like it was an only SNL moment.
That's
like,
what a fantastic cool. And he's like,
if I move my clock too fast, I'm going to wake up Don Pardo and miss my live television line. And then Jane Lynch is going to be upset.
That also sounds like a Stefan line. We've got everything from sleeping Don Pardo. Yeah. But you know who my new Don Pardo that I don't want to see go yet is Johnny Gilbert from Jeopardy. Johnny Gilbert's the guy that goes, this is Jeopardy. Yeah. And you see
you're
him.
You're very
you go,
good at voices,
and
too.
And you go, Johnny, don't move Johnny. Like he's like the couch in your grandma's living room with plastic on it.
I just did Kelly and her husband. What's his name?
Mark.
Jesus Christmas.
Kelly and
Sorry,
Mark.
Yes.
Kelly Ripa and Mark Cosuelos.
Yes.
The sexiest
And Gelman
couple.
Was there, and you're like, Gelman?
Gelman, what are you still doing here?
What's up, dog?
Like, yeah. I remember them.
Like, oh my gosh.
We're going back Regis Kathy Lee's days.
Yeah, I was like, how you doing, Gelman?
Oh, gee. You see him?
I pretty much did that, and he was like, all right.
That's enough.
I get it.
Like, I'm, when Katie did Celebrity Jeopardy, we're huge Jep heads, and I really wanted to meet Ken Jennings, the greatest player of all time, and the only, who would you argue? Brother,
I'm just kidding.
I hate to tell you this, Go back and watch. I watch YouTube highlights of him just absolutely bodying nerds. Bloop, 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 bloop. Jenny stayed on that thing. That he nuts. Kept the blicky on him. Bloop, bloop. But I was super excited to meet him. And then I was like a little kid at Disney World where they're like, I want to meet Mickey. And they're like, Mickey's not here today. And I was like, is Johnny Gilbert here? And they're like, no.
Ken was that's like, me all the time, constantly. Yeah. Also, this, I'm on the tour for Hoppers right now. And I'm like, is Meryl Streep going to be? No, she's not. Okay.
Did you? Do,
like a lot of that
when you because I don't think people know this with voiceover work. Sometimes you're in a booth with other people if it's a scene.
Yeah,
but sometimes you just have to hear how they read it and then you play. And it
sometimes
back.
You don't.
So with sometimes Hoppers,
I mean Hoppers was different. I mean like Hoppers has been years. This has been like a couple years of my life. So it's like I've had different versions. I didn't record with anyone. The girl who plays the main lead, Piper Curta, who plays Mabel, the main beaver. Yeah,
the girl who goes into the beaver.
Yeah. Didn't meet her till after we finished recording. And we now have like spent more time with each other than other people I have worked with for many years because of just from promoting the movie.
Sure.
But yeah, we never, but like I did Inside Out and Inside Out 2.
Yeah, both great.
Me and Paula Poundstone are like Forgetter Bobby and Forgetter Paula.
Yeah.
And we recorded together for all of those. Like we got to improvise. They flew us up to Emeryville, Pixar, and like we... They record, you know, it was like this, like, you know, they put us in a room with cameras. They recorded us like, you know, like we got to do some stuff together. But this one, we didn't. But when I would get to hear Piper throughout.
When you go to a place like Pixar, are you kind of like lost in it of like, oh, wow, because you forget that Pixar's like got.
Well, yes. The
Toy Story.
I was on SNL.
Yeah.
And I just got an email. I think that was like from Dan Scanlon. That was like, saw this sketch on SNL. It was the Jammy Shuffle. Andy's. It was a SNL digital short.
Sure.
Where we were all kids playing like on a kid show, and I was just like a little kid, but like it ended up with like all of us murdering each other. Yeah. You know, comedy.
Yeah.
And he was just like, saw you in this. We have this character in Monsters University, and I thought you would be great for it. Like, do you want to do it? And I was like, what? Like, are you kidding me? Like a Pixar movie? Like, of course. And then they were like, great, we're going to fly out to Pixar. And I was like, what? Like, and went there and like was definitely that boy. Was like, they gave me a tour of Pixar. Like, and like that place is nuts. Like, it's built for creativity. There's like a person walking. It's like a college campus. And there's a guy walking around with a gelato cart just like around.
Sick.
And then they have rooms where you can get massages and like all this stuff. And everyone gets to decorate their own space. And they have like a plot of land, not an office, that they can do whatever they want. So someone has someone's desk is the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. And the person next to them is a Jurassic Park themed thing with working waterfalls. And like they have like
that's
someone has the Batman thing and they move it and there's a speakeasy behind their office and like everything is it like that. And then they go, you want to see something really cool? And they open up a vent, an actual vent in the wall, and you crawl in it. And it is the vent they had. It's like just this gap in the wall that when Bill Gates and them were working there, they would like go in there and hang out. And it's like just like a vent with like it's like air conditioning ducts and you hang out in there and it's but now it is signed by everyone that has they have shown it to. So it's like Barack Obama next to Anthony Daniels, C-3PO, and then like they're like, you want to sign it? And I signed in between Barack Obama and Anthony Daniels, and I remember thinking like, that's a good spot, like in the Pixar building.
Barack Obama, but Bobby,
like,
yeah, Moran.
They just show you like all this crazy stuff and this Pixar history. It's a beautiful and now, like, this is my fourth Pixar movie, and I go, like, I can't. Like,
it's one of those things where, thank God I don't work in that field, because if they were like, you could have your own desk, it's like, well, I just want to back float all day.
Yeah.
And they go, I don't think we can do that. And you go, but I need the temperature, and I want it chlorine. Yeah. I don't want salt water. I want to float in chlorine.
And, like,
water.
I wonder if they would, like, figure that out.
If you were good enough at your job.
I wonder, like, if they, it seems like the place where they would be like, all right.
Because the first guy in tech that tried.
Real fast, you know, he's pretty good.
Have you seen it?
He made eight leaves today.
He made a tree sing and dance. We're letting him go.
This guy, 46 hairs an hour.
Watch him work. Yeah. And also look at his desk. He recreated the Titanic.
Yeah.
It's to scale. It's like, it's a giant freighter. It's there. Yeah, I always.
Every day at two, his desk splits in half.
I was like that when I went to, I did like with the WWE network, they had me up there and I was like, walking around, and then they did a thing where they're like, act cool, and you're like, no, I don't want to act cool. Don't take away from...
I did a movie with John Cena, this movie, Sisters.
Yeah.
With John Cena. I wrestled John Cena in that movie, and like, the coolest, and he was like, you want to come to WrestleMania? And I was like, what's this?
Do I want to go with one of the greatest wrestlers of all time?
Yeah, I do.
To your work?
So me and Taron Killam from SNL.
One of my favorite cast members of all time. I would argue one of the most criminally underrated SNL cast members of all time.
Easily.
He was one of those guys where you watched and you went, what the fuck?
He's like a Dan Aykroyd or a Phil Hartman. He did
a Taco Bell commercial as Brad Pitt that people forget that makes me like, whoa. And he'd go
impressions.
Rita, come on, man. And like the way he does it.
Like Jay Farrow's a mimic. Jay Farrow looks at you up and down and then goes like, all right, I'll do these four things.
His Stephen A. Smith run on Weekend Update was one of my favorites.
Taron is like the opposite. Taron's like a painter. Like he goes, these are the four things that person does. But I noticed that he also goes like, bleh, and like he'll do that. And you just go like, yeah, you're right. Like
that thing that he'd do as Brad Pitt,
where he'd be like, I don't do impressions, but Taron makes it easy for me to do impressions
because he can just find those.
Like it's this sound, like
that is that's that always he, what it is.
He's great. He's great at that.
It's one. Jay Farrow.
Not.
I would say Jay Farrow is the greatest impersonator alive.
I would agree, man. I'm so glad that they are both getting high praise right now because they deserve it a great deal.
Because people go like, oh, you do voices. And I go, I do sentences. These guys do like full impressions.
Jay would do this thing that like I've never seen with anyone else. Like, and I don't understand it. It was like a superpower. He would do like if he start like so like... Jay would write sketches that were crazy. Jay would write sketches where he's like, I'm the Pillsbury Doughboy, but I was burnt to a crisp, so now my name is Pillsy, and I'm a gangbanger. And Lauren would be like, okay.
I didn't think we were going to go in that direction.
That was a real one that I think he did that was crazy. Like, you know, like he'd be like, this guy, Uncle Bear. Well, he had a guy with a stick that had a bear on the end of it named Uncle Something. That's all I remember. He had a lot of crazy characters. Yeah. We all did.
Yeah.
But Jay had crazier characters. But then Jay would come into the room, like the pitch room, and like, do his pitch as Hannibal Buress.
That's so funny.
And I don't understand how to explain this correctly, but he would like access Hannibal Buress's comedy brain for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
so he would be able to like improvise as Hannibal. If that makes sense.
It's the thing that I'm the most... I know exactly what you're talking about, and I think that's the point I'm making with Jay Farrell.
Like it's almost like he left Jay aside for 5 minutes, and he just becomes Hannibal and goes like, this is everything Hannibal's about, and then goes like, wasn't that nuts? And you're like, how did you do that, man? Like, what? Like, you just...
It's my favorite thing about Jay.
Took on his concepts of comedy and executed them perfectly. Like,
there's clips of him. There's a clip of him on a morning show while he's promoting a stand-up gig,
mm-hmm.
and he does Kevin Hart doing his New Year's resolutions, and it's Kevin Hart. It's like the way he does it, where he goes, bam, here's what I'll do. I'll get knee implants, 7 feet tall, bam, now I'm in the NBA. And he does it in a way with the hands and stuff that you go, this is Kevin Hart. That's just Kevin Hart.
It's crazy. It's like, there's someone on the X-Men, like if they touch, like, you know, Rogue, they absorb your powers. Like, that's what he has.
That's funny. Lauren's like, shake hands with Jay. We're going to need him.
And he's gave him velvet gloves. Be gentle. Jay has just a white streak in his hair from now on.
He takes his gloves
off. And Lauren shaves his head. Lauren is Professor X. Who really are we kidding? Yeah.
100%. He's
a billion percent makes me Beast or Blob.
No. I would think you're Beast or Wolverine.
Interesting. I'll take it. I would make a fantastic Wolverine.
You would be great as like Wolverine Wolverine was like, I don't like violence.
Can you imagine what would happen? I just want to see. Oh, there are so many people's face I want to see where they go,
Bobby.
Hey, honey. Bobby Moynihan just got cast as Wolverine. I would pay billions
someone's
for that.
Someone's doing dishes, and they're like, oh, you mean in a new cartoon? No. Live action.
Live action. Oh, no way.
And he's gonna play Wolverine. What universe? I mean, Comic-Con, they would just be the line to see you being like, what the hell? But Lauren really is. People. He really is Professor X. He just shows up in a small Indiana town and he's like, I heard you can do a perfect impression. Show me your powers.
I see promise. Yeah.
The only, I will say
he's completely uncontrollable, but I know how to do it.
I understand. He's going to turn dark and then he'll go to Magneto. That's Mag TV. Magneto and the Dark Forces are Mag TV. But he is, he's like, I mean,
we call them the new mutants.
They work with the government to eradicate.
Well, I mean, if you want to work with Mr. Sinister.
I guess if you think that Juggernaut is good at physical comedy.
Sure, Bobby. If you think Juggernaut is cool. this is my new favorite bit.
Lauren is Professor X. I read your mind. You've got a lot of dad stuff. You're going to fit in perfect.
We're thinking about pairing you with Nightcrawler for a movie. I don't know if it'll work, but you know what? It's a summer.
A lot of people thought Tina was my Jubilee, and I proved them wrong. I really proved them wrong.
They have no idea she was my Storm.
She could change the weather, make it very icy in here if she wanted. Oh, she could change the weather.
Yeah. Were there?
I'll tell you what's funny is sitting here talking to you. How much I reference or quote the kings of catchphrase comedy.
Oh, my heart just jumped a beat.
Me and Big J used to think that was Slappy Pappy. Wait, what is Slappy Pappy? If a Dracula's chasing you, turn around and trip the bitch.
Which is a real Sinbad thing. You know Charlie Sanders? Charlie Sanders introduced me to this. Credit where credit is due. I think it was Sinbad who said, if a Dracula is chasing you, turn around and trip the bitch. And we just thought that was the funniest thing in the world.
I didn't know that was a real joke.
And I've just shoehorned it in. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that was a real joke. I was like, that's such a
I
fun
think the
joke
story was that Charlie had a tape of, like, a VHS tape of stand-up. And, like, you know when you would tape stuff?
Yeah.
And, like, then, like, there would be, like, something in the middle, and then you would tape something. So there was just, like, one clip in between, and it was just a clip of Sinbad going, if a Dracula is chasing you, turn around and trip the bitch. And then, like, the next thing started, and he told me about it, and that always stuck with me.
It's great. That
shoehorned that in there. Just because Brian Tucker was one of the writers.
Shout out Brian Tucker.
Oh, the best.
I wrote a show with him.
Oh, and the greatest.
He was the one that would tell me Jay Farrow stories, because he would write the Stephen A. Smith things with him.
Yeah,
we were writing the show while they were doing it, and he goes, he just turns into Stephen A. Smith. On the Weekend Update, because there's ones where he goes, I know Dwayne Wade. He feeds me seedless fruits. And I asked Tucker, I said, who came up with that? He goes, Jay. Jay came up with that.
Yes. Like, Jay will say things while doing impressions that he would not say as Jay in real life.
Yeah.
Does that make
sense? He accesses a part of his brain
it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like when the Matrix, when he's like, I need to know Kung Fu real quick. And like, he downloads it. Like, that's what it feels like. It's like, he just goes like, okay, I can now be as equally funny as Hannibal Buress.
It's crazy.
And then all of a sudden he's back to Jay going like, what did I just say? Like, it's amazing.
But yeah, Brian Tucker's the man.
Brian's the best. Brian helped me write those. And Christine Nangle.
I love Christine Nangle.
Jake Szymanski.
Christine Nangle and I worked on a pilot together. And then I've been in writing rooms with her. And she does Philly Girl, which is one of the funniest characters
of all
time.
I think I was in one of those Philly Girl videos.
But she was the first
person. I was like her surrogate or something like that.
She was the first person I watched in person, because she would do it in the writer's room jokingly as Philly Girl. And it was like, oh my God, this is every woman I've ever met from Philadelphia.
Yeah, she's hilarious. She's
like, I can get down there.
She runs the Simpsons now.
Does she?
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
Yes, it does.
You get into a writer's room with her and you go like, oh, you're the funniest person I think I've ever
she's
met
a genius.
In my life.
She's a genius. She's one of those people like James Anderson and Paul Appel at SNL, where you're just like, Brian Tucker,
Colin Jost.
Yeah, Colin Jost. Go like,
but Tucker, you look back, Chappelle Show, Chris Rock Show, mm-hmm. like all Tucker's this stuff.
Crazy. They just step in and they go like, yeah, we understand how to do this.
It's like Harvey Keitel in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, they're just really she's good Winston at structure of comedy, and like she's a genius. But Tucker told me about Hamburger. Or you ever see how he ends jokes just going hamburger?
Well, that's why Beef Jelly.
That's what that was
immediately
based off of.
And
yeah,
he is a black dude that wears a cowboy hat.
And you know Shucky Ducky?
Yeah, Shucky Ducky.
That's what Slappy Pappy was. He told me about Shucky Ducky.
Yeah,
people, I just wanted to be Sinbad my whole life, so now that was where that came from.
I don't think I've ever seen anyone kill harder than Sinbad at Caroline's. You walked in and you were like, he hurt this entire room with laughter. No cussing.
Well,
just went in and was like, you ever go on a date? And
how many hours do you think Sinbad did comedy before we knew who Sinbad was? You know what I mean? Like, it's like that man probably just has, how many hours of stand-up comedy has Sinbad done in his life?
Yeah, it is the 10,000 hours thing where you go, he's perfected it. He's just so good at it.
Yeah, he's more comfortable doing it than not.
Yeah, but the...
Keenan.
That blows my mind that Keenan is just,
if he's not on camera doing sketch comedy, he's relaxing.
Yeah.
And that is his entire life.
Would you put him as, I think
at
now.
At least I hope he is.
With you worked with him and we've seen his body of work on SNL. I think he's a top three cast member of all time, if not the best cast member.
I think if you're not being romantic about SNL and you're not going like Gilda and John, they have their spot. And you know what I mean? Like also Lorraine Newman too. Lorraine Newman should be much higher up there than everybody puts her. Keenan is number one cast member of all time.
I would put
he is Saturday Night Live.
I mean, you think about Eddie Murphy, obviously he saved the show from 80 to 85. Don't know Murphy.
Yeah. He was in Shrunk.
When you do the SNL reunion shows, you guys but like 40 and 50 were big deals.
I was at both.
Yeah.
The show for 40th, came back for the 50th.
When you go back for the 40th anniversary and you're on the show, is it like homecoming week where you're like, hey, we got to give our spots, like we're gonna be kind of the kids?
Well, I mean, that's the show. I got on the show and they were like, your cast members aren't in it anymore, Alec Baldwin's doing everything. And it was like, what's this now?
Excuse me, I thought someone could do
it. I tried real hard to get here.
I kind of dedicated my whole life.
Alec Baldwin got the Emmy nomination, great. I'm on that before him.
No. Hey, is this wall punchable?
Yeah, like, no, he's been here a whole bunch this week.
Oh, man, he's so cool.
He was up for 97 hours, too.
Yeah, you guys aren't just like a sleep deprivation.
I love you, Alec. I'm glad you got it.
Yeah, good job, Alec. Man, I'll tell you what. I did a scene in a movie with Alec Baldwin, and I was going through a breakup, and it was the oddest moment of my life because he was talking me through a
singular human.
And he's always Alec Baldwin.
So I did 30 Rock with him and SNL. Yeah, yeah. The best.
But we sat down at a diner and he went, we're going to do my coverage first. And you went, yeah, absolutely. And so, because Fred Wolf, it was a movie, it was Drunk Parents.
Fred Wolf, amazing.
That Fred Wolf was directing. And he does the coverage and then they're turning around. So we have a break and I'm like depressed because I'm going through this breakup. And Alec goes, we start talking and he stops and he goes, can I get a plate of fries? And they bring us a plate of fries. He's like, ketchup. And they bring the ketchup, and you're sitting there, and he's like, what happened? And we're sitting there eating French fries,
that's
and I'm
perfect.
And I'm telling him about the breakup. And I just remember, I was like, you know, she was real into it, and then she went on vacation, and she completely, like, changed. And he dips a fry in the ketchup, and he goes, someone got in her ear. And took a bite of the French fry, and I was like, in that moment, I went, this is the weirdest shit I've ever been through in my life. Is Alec Baldwin coaching me through a breakup?
It's so funny to hear. Like, it's just like, I know the answer.
Yeah. And he goes, you know, I went through a divorce in 2000. And I went, yeah, with Kim Basinger.
Like that. I think I heard about it, Alec. My favorite thing he ever said, he did monologues at ASCAT one time, improv show at UCB.
A legendary improv show.
Talking about being, like, when he first started, like, being a male on a soap opera and in Hollywood and, like, how these men would come after him, essentially.
Yeah.
And he just said this phrase one night. He talked about, like, some Italian man that approached him at a restaurant. And he went, he approached me. He had a wallet thick as hippo skin.
You know, who thinks that? What are you?
He
who
had a you? Wallet thick as hippo skin. I'll never forget that. Never forget it.
The confidence of that man.
Yes.
And most comedians, we can all agree, are insecure. It's why we go after laughs. It's why we are so desperate for laughs. It's why we just want to make people laugh. And having a man that confident around who's also very funny is...
I feel comfortable telling this story. Yeah. He goes, we were rehearsing at SNL and I passed him in the hallway. He had his dinner. His dinner had just gotten there and we were just done with dinner. We were about to start rehearsing again. And I noticed his dinner. He had it in his hand, like it just got there. And I remember thinking like, man, it's starting on time. And he goes to Jenna, the stage manager. He's like, hey, I just need my dinner. Like, or she said like, hey, Alec, 5 minutes. And he's like, my dinner just got here. And he's like, 5 minutes, we're starting to rehearse. And I just saw him kind of like look down and go like, okay. And he just walked into the studio and he was like, is this rehearsing next? Yeah. And I was like, the hotel scene? Yeah. I've never seen a hotel with this kind of television before. Can we get one with like the doors that open up? And he was like, I don't think we have that, but sure, I'll go look for one. And he was like, great. How long will that take? And the guy was like, 20 minutes. He was like, perfect.
Oh my God, what a genius.
And
what
I went,
genius.
Wow.
What a genius.
He's been in this business for a while. Goes, I was like,
that lighting scaffolding. I don't think that's
He just bought himself the 20 minutes he needed, not his problem, and then like took his bag and like winked at me. He did not wink at me, but he might as well have as
cutting
he walked
his steak
by.
In his dressing room. He goes,
with fingers like this. Yes. It was a perfect move.
That is so
it
cool.
It was a perfect move.
To watch him change the dynamic.
It was like, he's been at SNL longer than I have, man. He's been here for 100 years. He knew how to get 6 minutes.
That is so cool. Yeah. If you're a small business owner, damn, you got chutzpah. That's crazy. Because it scares me. How do you do everything? How do you run everything? I mean, now I know, and maybe you should know too, that support for today's episode comes from Square, the system powering most places you've gone that aren't a giant business. Like if you've ever tapped to pay or, you know, maybe you're selling lattes or cutting hair and the boop boop on your phone, Square probably helped you run your business without it yourself running into the ground. What it is it's the platform behind the scenes of a lot of businesses you already love. When someone's selling something or you need to get money, it's not just a point of sale. Square includes hardware for work in person and on the go, software for managing staff, marketing, and customer insights, and banking tools like Square Checking to get paid instantly. If you're starting a business or running one that deserves better tools, Square helps you sell, manage, and grow without slowing down. Right now, you can get $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/soder. That's square.com/go/soder. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today.
Oh, another time we were there, and someone asked where the bathroom was, and Tom Hanks was like, it's right down there. And I remember being like, yeah, of course, he's been here forever. He knows where, like, he knows where everything
God.
Is. Like,
he could probably tell me the renovations.
The quickness where Tom Hanks was like, it's right that way. Yeah. And like just went on. Like it was a very, like, you forget that there's like four or five famous people that like are essentially cast members.
Steve Martin can just walk in and Steve he goes.
Justin Timberlake was like that.
Timberlake's, yeah. I have an apartment built onto this to 8H. I can go to sleep. You guys want to go there? I still have.
Under the bleachers. Yeah. Candace Bergen's down there.
Yes, he goes, hey, you go, Murphy Brown.
Hey, Candy B.
Hey, where have you been? My friend who I worked with on Billions, and she still cuts my hair, but she was your Katie. She did your hair, and she was like,
is now my next door neighbor, I think.
Oh, I know where you live. You live.
Let's tell him.
Yeah.
No.
go to this neighborhood. But I'll go to 30 Rock to get my hair cut when it's a show week. Because she's like, hey, it's in the city. You don't have to come up all the way up there. Just come get my hair cut or whatever. And I will like stop. When they were doing SNL 50, they had, because it's in the wig shop. That's where I get my hair cut. So you walk through and you see.
Yeah, it's the floor. It's 8H. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like costumes. And SNL 50.
I stole everything.
Dude, they had two boxes out. And I took pictures and saw on my phone. It was next to each other. And I like stopped and it was Dana's church lady.
Oh, yeah.
And In a box.
I have a lot of those pictures, but I also, yeah.
Was Matt Foley.
A great deal. Yeah.
Was the Matt Foley, Chris Farley, Matt Foley suit. And they said when they pull them out, they're all like kind of together. So they, and I was like, this is what Farley wore. And yeah. They were like, yeah. Well, and I was like, and this is the Dana Carvey church lady.
That was the one of the coolest parts as being like an SNL fan was like being in the middle of a show in a quick change, throwing on a suit and seeing Farley or Belushi like written in the really? Pants because it's the same pants or the same costumes or like me and Chris Parnell have the same shoe size. So a lot of my shoes were Parnell or Farley. Like, it's like, oh my God. Like, or like you're seeing a picture, you're waiting to do a sketch and you're looking at a picture of Lothar of the Hill People. And you're like, oh my God, I used to watch this sketch. And then you're like, wait a minute. I'm wearing those boots.
That's
like, and you would just be like, I'm wearing those. That happened with a suit. I had a peach tuxedo on and I was like, this has to be like the coolest thing I've ever worn. And then you walk by a picture and there's John Belushi in a peach tuxedo and you're like, oh my God. And you look inside and it says Jay Belushi and you're like, oh my God, maybe Jim Belushi wore this. No, no. No, but like
from the movie K-9?
No, that Jim happened once Belushi? Too where I was like, Belushi wore this. Yeah. Like, oh, it might be Jim.
That is funny. Calm down, Bobby. Calm down. You've got a sketch to do.
No offense, Jim.
You're breathing? Get him the panic bag. He's wearing a hero's clothing.
Put me in Cerebro. We need to calm him down.
He goes, I'm going to go into his thoughts. I'm going to make him think
Moynihan's it's Jim. Moynihan's getting too grateful again. Goes, yeah. We can't have him happy.
I'm making him think he was a fan of According to Jim. But it is, you know, a lot of the times where I fucked up was I was too much of a fan when I auditioned. And when they called me in,
that's a fantastic sentence for people auditioning for SNL.
I was
too
much
hear.
Of a fan. I let it because I was writing a cartoon with Tucker,
mm-hmm.
and we were writing it.
Wow, I didn't know you knew him that well.
Yeah, and Tucker was like, we got put together and we were writing this thing, and I, you know, I was a big fan of him. And the first 2 weeks of us writing is just me asking questions about Chris Rock show, mm-hmm. Chappelle show, and SNL. But we're writing it, and then my agent was like, hey, do you want to audition from SNL? And I was such a fan that I was like, no, because I know.
I did the same thing.
Because I would go watch you guys at UCB, and
I was
like,
I need to wait. I'm not ready yet.
I'd also be like, no, like I'm not that funny. These guys are unbelievable. And Tucker and I were writing the show, and I was like, hey, I think I'm going to put myself on tape for SNL. And he was like, you should. You should do, you know how he is. He's like, yeah, do it. And so I did it. And
why he's great is because he can be emotionless.
Yeah, he goes.
He mm-hmm. can go like your emotions don't matter. So like maybe don't.
Yeah, that's yeah. exactly. It.
They don't
that's
matter.
A perfect description of yeah. him. Where he went, okay.
Yeah.
And then I did it, and they liked the tape, and they came back and they watched me do stand up, and then I did the live audition at UCB,
mm-hmm.
and I saw Frank Garcia Helge, who I was like,
oh amazing.
I was like, well he's.
He's SNL. He was born to be on that show.
I literally yeah. watched him. I'm not joking. I watched him at that UCB showcase, and I went to my agent, and I went, well, it's that guy. He just did a perfect Dan Aykroyd,
yeah.
and he did a perfect Jimmy Kimmel. I've never seen anybody do that. Give him SNL. That helped me, because then I went out there, and I went, fucking who cares? I saw the guy who's going to get SNL, and then Tucker was like, hey, they liked you. We're going to bring you in to 8H to screen test, and that's what fucked me up. Because I went in and I was like doing the thing in the hallway of like, oh, oh, oh. And then Dave, the director, you know, tells me, brings me in and he goes, hey, don't think too much or whatever. And I'm waiting to go up on home base and I'm a fucking idiot. And I went like Dana Carvey, Mike Myers, Chris Farley, Phil Hartman, one of my favorites of all time. And it fucked me up. And I was like too tight. I wasn't like funny. I wasn't loose.
Interesting.
And I was like, I got off stage and I remember walking out of 30 Rock and like just walking around that area and just sitting in front of a Chase Bank and being like, I fucked up.
Dude,
I fucked up.
Everyone who does that Chase Bank.
Yeah, I know exactly. And by the way, it's across the street
Chase
from Sirius.
Bank
it's on 48th
seen,
and 6th.
I know exactly. That Chase Bank has
where it's
seen
got the weird-
so many sad comedians. Yes.
I did a show across the street from that.
I called my mom from the vestibule of that Chase Bank going like, I think I got it.
What's funny is that ended up being, because for me, it was a place I called my agent. And I was like, I was too into it. I was too tired. I didn't do well. And then I ended up doing a Sirius XM show for 8 years, The Bonfire, which I loved to death. but we would smoke a joint before every show, and I would stare at that Chase Bank, and I'd be like, I remember failing and standing in front of that Chase Bank being like, ah, I fucked up. And then they brought me back the next year, but they brought me back in a way where they're like, I think it was Shookus was like,
I got brought back too. You know, I had the same exact thing. Well, I auditioned, was told, like, was brought in. Yeah, it was like me, Donald Glover, and Jordan Peele went in together. Crazy. And literally sitting on the three of us sitting on the couch talking to Lorne. And I had known both of them, you know, yeah. I had known Donald since he was 15.
Yeah, doing Derek.
Yeah. And, the three of us sat on that couch and he went like, well, I have decisions to make. And you're just like, what? Why are you toying with us? And, like, yeah. And then the writer's strike happened.
Oh.
So it was like 9 months of like, I think me and a couple of my friends are getting it, but I'm not sure. Like, it was crazy. And then like the second the strike ended, I saw like, it was like the strike ended like on the news.
Yeah.
And then it was like SNL, like literally like on my phone. And I was like, no way.
Fucking
and
A.
It was like, we can't hire you. Well, Maya Rudolph left during the strike and we're going to hire a woman instead. And I was just like, what? And then it was gone.
Yeah.
And it was gone.
So, I mean, and people don't realize.
A couple months later, it was like, come in on Monday. And by the next Monday, I was in a sketch with Michael Phelps.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize it really is the moment. You know you're going to get it if you meet Lorne. And I was writing that thing with Tucker and he was like, I think you're the last guy to not meet Lorne. He's like, I think you're the guy that gets cut off. And that was the year that I didn't think I did well.
Last guy to not.
So there was like,
got you. I see what
he's like,
mean,
he's going to talk to three people. And I think it was.
I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
It was Pete Davidson, Frank, and Andrew Santino were the three guys.
Wow. That's good to hear.
Yeah. That went and talked. And I was like, oh, I'm not getting it. And then the next year they were like, they called me up and they were like, hey, probably not going to get it, but we want to screen test them again. And this time I went in and I was way more loose.
Yeah.
And it really helped. I made Lorne crack during my audition. And that was the thing where I was like, I'm not going to get it.
That's all you got. It's and
but at least I got that.
Like, yeah.
And I got him to laugh at Winnie the Pooh, Addicted to Honey. There's a thing where he went like, bah, like that.
Which you would have written and I would have got cast as.
I would have loved that. I would have loved that. I just wanted
or
the idea.
Or like Peter Dinklage, who I believe played Winnie the Pooh in that a sketch this, I was in. I might have been Eeyore in that.
That was the same year the year I auditioned.
Oh, wait. I think I know this story.
Yeah.
Where I think I've like, heard you talk about that.
Well, the first one was Jason.
I think I was in that sketch.
Jason Statham's Jason Stakeums. When I auditioned, I did Jason Statham Edible Arrangements. And I went, oh, you're sick of getting the same old fruit. Send your love a cantaloupe shaped like a fist. And then they did Jason Statham, Jason Stakeums. And I went, that's much better. You like, see that? You go, that's way tighter,
it's
way funnier.
It's so crazy, like, being on both sides. Like,
yeah.
Being a fan of SNL for many, many years. And still so since after. And being there, that whole thing. Like, I've seen it a couple times where someone's like, that's my idea.
Yeah.
And it's like, seeing comedy like minds like write the same thing very close to each other has happened many times and you go like,
but I'm not one of those people that goes like, I'm not one of those people that was angry about it, because what I've said before and I've told the story is that when you audition they go, hey, you're giving us all this.
You ever read Jay Moore's
book?
That's
what I was just going to bring up.
I've read that book 100 times and he's, because of that.
You want to talk about one of the best voice guys of all time.
Yeah.
Jay Moore is one of the greatest impressionists.
Another like Jay Farrow, he's a where Jay you Farrow just go level. Like doesn't get the respect that he deserves.
My favorite clip of Opie and Anthony, one of my favorite clips is he calls in and he's doing voices. And then he does Reservoir Dogs with Bobby Kelly and Colin Quinn. And it's...
Oh, yeah.
To this day...
that live.
He goes, I don't know. This guy's getting blood all over the back of my... backseat of my Cadillac. It's on my LA sneakers. And you're like, it's a perfect Colin Quinn.
Yeah, he's insane.
He's the best. His Harvey Keitel is
I
like,
could listen to him do Colin Quinn like all day long. Do you know James Adomian?
Yes. James Adomian... I would say it's criminal he never got to be on SNL.
I don't know if I've ever said this out loud. James Adomian, I don't know if you're going to hear me say this now on a podcast. Sometimes when I'm sad,
yeah.
I listen to James Adomian doing, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name. The LA radio host that was really mean to women.
Oh,
God.
Wait, he's not doing Don Imus?
No, not Don Imus. Oh, my God. There was like a guy, he had like rules and he would blow him up, Tom Likas, blow him up, Tom. Yeah. He would go like, you gotta go to the school of Tom Likas, blow it up, Tom, TomLikas.com. And he's just like, you know, like if a woman is marrying you, she wants your money. Like, you know, like, and it's just like, and he's a piece of garbage, this guy. But James Adomian's improvising as him is like something like, When I need to relax, it's like Zach Galifianakis live at the Purple Onion.
Right.
Him, James Adomian doing Tom that, Likas. Doing Tom Likas, or like Jiminy Glick.
See, my favorite, Jiminy Glick is phenomenal.
Like, that's what I listen to.
My favorite thing of James Adomian that I bring up all the time on YouTube that I show to people on my phone, like a proud parent, and I sit and I watch them watch it, right? How great is that? Is him doing Lewis Black reading out of a girl's diary where he goes, "Today was the best day of my life." And I'm not even doing it justice, where he goes, "Timmy said I was cute." Heart thing. And he's like, does the finger thing in a way that amazing. You're like, please watch. If you're watching this at home, pause this. Go watch James Adomian doing Lewis Black.
I can't wait to see
reading
that.
Out of a 13-year-old girl's diary.
I was in Inside Out and Inside Out 2.
Yeah.
And I got to see a screening with Lewis Black of Inside Out 2.
Oh, yeah, his anger.
Never met him before in my life. I still don't know if he knows who I am.
Yeah.
I don't care. I walked past him and I said, "It's a great movie." And he went, "For a cartoon."
You go, yeah, the guy from Pixar is like, "Ah, oh, shit." Yeah.
He said, "For a cartoon."
For a cartoon.
About Inside Out 2.
What an old, what a, like
it's
an old
timey.
The funniest
thing I've ever heard.
He goes, "A talkie? That's just cartoons? That's a talkie that's drawings."
To say that about a, to be.
Oh. Yeah, that is great. He, Adomian was one of the first person to do a perfect Jesse Ventura. And he would do those.
Wow.
He does Mark Maron perfect. He does Jesse Ventura perfect.
You
and Paul Giamatti.
You want to know how good I am at impressions? I played Jesse Ventura on SNL in What Up With That, and I never said a word, but I tap danced the whole. I tap danced across stage with a cobra, with a giant snake on my neck.
Yeah, that's a Tucker sketch.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Yeah, what's up with that? Sudeikis just hitting the running man every time.
I love Lindsay how Buckingham. Silly Tucker is. I love how silly.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters I ever got on, I wrote with Brian Tucker and John Solomon, is this character called Janet Peckinpah, the dumbest thing in the world. It was just this lady who was just begging celebrities to have sex with her and would say, "Just please, just throw one in me, please." And I would. It was Brian Tucker. It was me and Brian Tucker as a woman, and that should never happen.
And I hope Tucker doesn't get mad that I'm saying this on a podcast. But when we were writing that thing, I was at the Cellar, and Amy Schumer was filming Trainwreck with Bill Hader, who had just left SNL, mm-hmm. and Hader was like at the Cellar, and he's like hanging out. And
Pete was in that too, right?
Yeah, Pete Davidson was in. That's where Bill Hader saw.
That's
Pete
where they met.
And got an SNL, but. Hader was like at the Cellar, and I was like, "Hey, I'm writing a pilot with Brian Tucker." And he went, "Please have him do the impression of a man being fucked in the ass to death." And I went, "I'm absolutely going to ask him about that." And then we're in Tucker's apartment, and I go, "Can you do the impression of the guy getting fucked?" And he's at his laptop, and he goes, "Yeah." Yeah, then shut it and did it, and it was, oh my god, I don't. Dude, it's,
you're like my wife. Like, there are people that just like they, when they talk about people, they just like, you just became Brian Tucker for a sec. That was crazy. My wife is like that. I can't do that. Brian Tucker did an amazing thing to me. Was telling me about like what it was like to work on the Chris Rock show.
Yeah,
and you have to understand, I'm telling this story out of order.
Sure.
I'm going to tell what happened after first.
Yeah.
He told me this story after he did this to me.
Okay. Okay. I like that.
He said when he was on the Chris Rock show, his first night on the Chris Rock show, he was writing a sketch, and Chris Rock walked in the room, said, "What are you working on? Like, nice to meet you. What are you working on?" And he said he showed him the sketch, and that Chris Rock took it, opened the window, threw it out the window, closed the window, and went like, "I'm just kidding, man." And like, just did like a bit.
Sure.
He told me this after my first night at SNL.
Yeah.
I'm writing. Tucker walks in. He says, "What are you writing?" I hand him my sketch, and he looks at it, and he opens up the window, and he throws it out the window, and I see it flutter across Radio City Music Hall. And I look at him like, why on earth?
Why are you so cruel?
Why on earth? I'm like, I'm a grown man. Like, why would you do that? And he laughs and he's like, and then he tells me the Chris Rock story. He's like, they did that to me on my first day. He goes, so print me up another one and then hand it to me. And I went, I don't have a computer yet. I wrote it on paper and you just threw it out the window.
Oh no. He's like,
and he was like, I'll be right back. And like literally like ran outside to like go try and find it. And I was like, Tucker, don't worry about it, man. Yeah. But like,
that
really happened.
That's great.
And I was like, oh my God, why are you so, they're so cruel here.
Why are you so mean? Well, you know, what's funny is New York stand-up, the throwing the paper out the window is when you're a young comic and you walk up with a drink and someone just slaps it out of your hand on the sidewalk and you go, why would you do that to me?
That's
Bobby got me like that. Jim Norton did it to me once where he went, shut up.
That's territorial when it's coming from another comedian in a comedy club. I feel like I had the lighting designer for SNL, Phil Himes, God rest his soul. He was another Don Pardo. He had been like in the building forever. He was 6,000 years old when he passed. I love him with all my heart.
Lauren's like, there's an Emmy that will release him.
He has 700 Emmys, meanest man in television. in like the best way possible. He was the one that walked up to Jennifer Lopez and be like, shut your mouth, we're moving. You know what I mean? Like he was that guy.
Well, you need a person like that in those shows.
He was old school.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that. It was my first week on the show. I'm in the hallway. There were famous people around. I'm standing there. I have a cookie on a plate and he just smacked it out of my hand and went, think thin, Moynihan, you're on television now. And I was like, wow.
Ouch. What a moment. You know, I really wanted that cookie.
Yeah, I'm really glad Bo Bridges heard that.
Oh, you know, the lesser known Bridges of the Bridges Boys.
Well, that was that you'd be standing in the hallway and or walk down the hallway and it would just be like insane. Or you would be waiting to go, you'd be like dressed as a pirate waiting to go in a sketch. I was watching the monitor one night waiting to go on and the sketch ended and there was like a plastic dinosaur that walked at the end of the sketch and did something stupid. And Steven Spielberg just leaned over my shoulder and went, mine were better. And I was just like,
that's crazy.
This place is the best.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah, and that.
But there is those people that like, you know, for anyone that's ever pursued a dream and then there's a moment where you get to do the thing you've dreamed about, but you're in this stage where you're like, what the fuck? The first time I saw Chris Rock in person, I was like, at Stand Up New York, and he came in to do a set, and I was like,
he came up to me at a Jet game.
Yeah.
Once. Like, just like felt a hand on my shoulder and he was just like, hey man, you doing good? We're treating you right? Like, we had been through a war together.
Yeah.
That's never met him, never spoke to him. Like, he was just like SNL. Like, you know, like it was just like that.
Yeah.
And then when he hosted SNL, not as kind.
That's crazy.
Was very much like, not meaning he was mean, was very much like, how long you been on the show? You got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Like he went into like Papa mode.
Well, he does that. I mean, he did that. He's done it at the Cellar for 15 years. Yeah. Where if you walk in and you're not famous, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna do this guy. And you're like, all right, we're coworkers though.
The best advice I never listened to I got from Chris Rock. If I could go back, if I had a comedy time machine to go back in time and take something back, standing on stage, backstage at the benefit concert, the Sandy Hurricane benefit concert.
2012, yeah.
With like Kanye West and all those people. Mm-hmm. Kanye West is on stage. Me and Seth Meyers are backstage. I'm dressed as drunk uncle. And Chris Rock comes up to me. He goes, you're not going out there, are you? Dressed like that? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, don't go out there, man. Don't go out there. Like he was like concerned for me.
Why?
And I was like, what are you talking about, man? Like, relax. I'm going out to do this bit. We walked out on stage to complete silence, just like silence. Kanye West had just finished. He was in a kilt, screaming the N-word and like dropping, like three, like, you know, like, and then out comes Drunk Uncle in hour 7 of this concert where they're waiting for Bruce Springsteen, Chris Christie's in the audience. And Drunk Uncle comes out and it was just Madison Square Garden as a whole turned to each other and went like, beers, we're all getting beers. Oh. Yeah. And like the entire Madison Square Garden just stood up and left. And we just, and Chris Rock was 100% right.
But
he was like, don't go out there.
In your defense.
And I've never bombed so hard in my life.
But you can't.
At Madison Square Garden.
You can't, and no offense to you.
I walked.
You can't change that lineup.
No.
You can't go. I'm not going out there. Chris
no.
Rock,
also, it was supposed to be Stefan in the height of Stefan, and Bill was like, I'm not doing it. And I was like, okay. Like, they were like, send Moynihan out there. And like, I was an idiot and was like, I'll do it. Like, thinking like it was going to benefit me somehow.
Like, the Garden was going to be like,
Didn't think I would be walking home crying dressed as drunk uncle because I just walked down the stairs of Madison Square Garden and out the front door. I didn't even go to my car that was waiting for me. I just went the way I knew how to get out of Madison Square Garden and walked home. And SNL was like, where's the costume? I was like, it's on my bathroom floor.
It looks like it got evaporated. There is not a... People don't understand bombing until you've walked out of the room in stage makeup.
Until you've called your mom and go like, do I just come home? Did I make a mistake?
I did that. That's the story I told about bombing on Mom's Night Out when they filmed this stand-up show for moms and I needed the money. This is like 2011. And they're like, hey, you kind of do some jokes that are, it's about my mom dating a bunch of dudes. And they were like, hey, you should do those jokes. And I went and I did it and I bombed.
Yeah.
I bombed bad. And then they called, I was still a waiter, and they called me while I was waiting tables and they went, why don't you come back tonight? We'll do it again. Why don't you try softening the jokes? It was at 1515 Broadway, TRL Studios.
Wow.
So Times Square is out the window.
My sister used to work there.
And I bomb so bad that I get off stage, grab my backpack out of the green room, full stage makeup, went downstairs, went to a bar, got a beer, called my mom and was like, am I wrong?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Am I wrong in doing this? And she was like, I don't think so, but I wasn't there. And I was like, yeah, bombing. Drunk. Someone in New York City saw you sad as drunk uncle near the Garden and was like, that couldn't be. What do you think? He walks around in the costume? And they go, I'm pretty sure.
I hope someone saw that.
Yeah.
That's the one. You know what someone gave me recently, which is crazy? It's crazy. Is someone gave me a photo. It's like they took a, I used to work at Pizzeria Uno in Central Avenue in Yonkers. And someone has, there's a photo of them at Pizzeria Uno. And I'm in the background cleaning the bar watching Saturday Night Live.
No way.
I would watch it every Saturday. I like lost customers because they were like, can we watch the game? And I was like, no.
Yeah. You don't understand.
Saturday. Like Tom every Hanks TV is SNL. And they're like, Bob, you have tables. And I'm like, I don't care. Like I'm watching, you know, TV. Like,
that's the good version of a bad employee story. Where you go, he used to watch SNL all the time and would fight customers if they changed it. And you know where he ended up? SNL.
SNL, yeah.
Most of the time they go, he wouldn't change the channel and he'd fight customers. You know what happened to him? Prison.
It was in Westchester County where the X Mansion is.
Oh, Lauren knew.
It's all coming together.
I'm bringing you back with my Cyclops, Tracy Morgan.
My Cyclops is Colin Jost. Yeah. We all know that.
By the way,
I mentally cast Colin Jost as Cyclops. Because I was like, no, Colin Jost is the Cyclops of SNL. Tracy. Colin Jost, I'm going to say this because it needs to be said. There are two people besides Keenan that are extremely important to Saturday Night Live's history. And I think Tina Fey is one of them. And Colin Jost should be known as one of the top four people important for Saturday Night Live ever.
Kept that thing together in a ways that people, they think he just does Weekend Update. And you're like,
and no idea. Also just like kind, a good, kind dude.
Yeah.
Like just like the best.
He was so nice. When I didn't get it, I saw him at the Comedy Cellar, and he was so fucking nice about it. He goes, hey, you did a really good job. And you're like, hey.
He's that. He's good at that. Good at the bedside manner of it. That's fantastic.
It was really good. Sorry you didn't get it, you know, because, and I was like, thanks, man.
Look up his family. His family's amazing, too.
Yeah, his
both
brothers,
his parents have phenomenal
Colin
stories.
Is,
yeah.
Colin's guy comes from a great family.
Yeah.
His brothers, Casey's a hilarious writer. And his dad is like, their whole family.
Left for the 50th, got on the plane for the 50th, not knowing if I was in the show. My ego had died. I was just like, I guess that's it. But I had also like entered this amazing phase where I was like, oh my God, I get to go see it for the first time as a fan. Like I never got to go.
Really?
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, before you were like, on the show.
I never got to go.
And after, you never went back to watch like anybody
I went host? Back. No, I went back once and I didn't, I felt like, it just, it's a lot. And you feel, I wish I didn't. I wish I could go back every weekend and not be a problem. But I think that's another reason why I wasn't so great there, was like, I wasn't my authentic self. Like, you know, they, you know that whole thing. I'm being serious. You know what I mean? Like, if I go there, I want to go and relax. And I think I can do that now. But at that time, no.
That makes complete sense, by the way.
After the 50th, everything changed. But like, went to that 50th going like, this isn't for you. This is for SNL. And by the time I landed, they were like, not only are you in the show, you're doing a drunk uncle. It's because of, like, they didn't say this, but like, it's because of Colin and you should thank him.
Yeah.
Colin changed a lot of people's lives that night.
Oh, wow.
By speaking up and going, we should give this person and this person and this person a moment for their brains for the rest of time. That's because like just being involved in that and just feeling that sense of like, I put my time in there.
Yeah.
And it's the 50th. Colin gave me that and gave a lot of people. Colin looked out for a lot of people that night. And
I love that.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a cool thing that people should know, because I think a lot of the times people think, well, what is he worried about?
That was
he
one was of the awesome best nights of my life. One of the coolest experiences of my entire life. Well, yeah, too. Because you're like, I sat down in that chair with Chris, the stage manager, and I was like, I'm sitting a drunk uncle at the 50th. Like, they gave me a minute, however long I have, during the 50th of Saturday Night Live. Like, I can't believe how lucky I am. And then I turned and went like, I'm home. I'm home again. Like, and it wasn't home. It was not the studio audience. It was Oprah and Conan and... And they're all right here.
Yeah.
And it was very, very different. And that happened really quickly for me. Like, I went from like, man, I'm home again, to like, oh no.
Look who's in my house.
You can see it. I rip Colin's jacket. I rip the buttons off his jacket. And he goes, you ripped my buttons during the 50th. Because I was just like, like, it was like, I can't explain to you those... I hate when actors talk about acting and all that stuff, but like those 2 minutes, I'll never.
Was the pop, did you take in the pop? Because watching SNL 50.
It was a hard audience. But that's a hard audience to make left.
Drunk Uncle got a huge pop. As a fan that watched it you got the like.
It felt like.
You rolled out.
It felt like the audience went like, we're sick of clips. There's someone performing for us. Let's laugh for him. It felt like they were grateful to not be watching clips and to see someone who was happy to perform for them. And they felt, you got Meryl, you're looking at Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
And she's laughing and you're like, it was a very, a chemical reaction in my body happened. You know, it's when a studio audience laughs and you know you're doing well on SNL, you're happy that Lauren's happy. On the 50th, you're going, Conan O'Brien's laughing at me.
They're one of the greatest
and
minds.
I can see it. And Jerry Seinfeld's, you know what I mean? Like next to him. And you're like, it just, something broke. And I just went like full drunk uncle with Colin. And like, it was the one of the best 2.5 minutes of my life.
Well, I will tell you, you know, I think as someone that was watching at home that loves the show, I think you forget that the audience at SNL 50 is Oprah, Conan, Jerry Seinfeld, Steven Spielberg.
Also the regular audience is that, and because it was the 50th, they have extra seats. Sure. So it was like the desk and then Jerry Seinfeld and Oprah and Steven Spielberg and George Lucas and every single famous person, Jack Nicholson, and you're noticing this, you're looking at cue cards and you're like, can Viola Davis get out of the way so I can see, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it was that has never happened at SNL.
Yeah.
And yeah, that night.
But I would say, as someone that watched it at home, you forget that the audience is that famous. And I think everyone reacted at home the same way that the regular fans did. They were like, drunk uncle. Like, we wanted to see. There are characters you want to see when they know.
And that's too with the SNL fans too. Like, it's like, you want to see characters. Like, it was like the silliest thing in the world was like, and it weirdly meant a lot to me, was like insinuating that, Cecily was pregnant, insinuating that drunk uncle and the girl at the party now have a child. Like, my SNL nerd brain went, like, back to, like, you remember those Wayne's World? Yeah. Like, when Wayne's World came out, the books?
Yes.
There was, like, those graphic books that was just, like, SNL writers. Now, being an adult, realizing that SNL writers just got, like, 50 grand to put a bunch of jokes in a book.
Yeah.
And, like,
I bought those books.
Yes, I still have them.
Yeah. I was obsessed, like, with Wayne's World, so I know exactly too.
They had a flip book of Wayne in the corner doing the dream sequence thing. It was my favorite book in the world. I don't remember why I started.
No, I love it, but because I think.
But SNL, I like those fans, books and those jokes. Like,
but SNL fans saw you, and I think it really was a moment of, like, you know what it is? It's like when you're a real big fan of a band and they're at a festival. You go, if you're a really big fan of them, you go, I'm not going to get the same concert I would have got if I just went and saw them. But sometimes they play a song and you go, oh, and other people now get to see this.
And
I feel like that was your moment at the festival to go, like, oh, fuck, hell yeah, I love this.
It was nice. It was also nice to go, like, oh, people do know this.
Yeah. I mean, people love that shit.
At least I did. You know, you talk yourself out of it a little bit.
Well, the come down is like, I shouldn't get this. I'm a piece of shit. No one gives a shit.
That's why we're all comedians, is because we're better at that.
That's why we're not Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we're not going in going, I need 7 minutes.
It's also why there's no handsome, funny men. It's true.
Yeah, well, because they go,
John Hamm's pretty funny.
John Hamm is pretty funny, but I think a lot of them need damage. You need, like, damage on the inside to go, this isn't all fixed. That's why Alec Baldwin can do all that, because there's something in him. There's he did something, which was crazy, because you go, like, I was real big on, like, I did a movie with him, and then after that you go, I didn't do a movie with him. it was a very safe movie. But you did Hoppers in theaters right now. King George. That's how you pivot. That's how you sell.
That's another crazy thing. I was thinking about this, saying to my wife, it's like I'm in the lead in a Pixar movie and I'm going to talk about SNL the whole time. Watch.
Yeah. And
it's that's the power of SNL.
We talked about the fall and rise of Reggie Dinkins.
Yes, true.
And
it's so true. There you
fucking, we plugged the other thing. I truly think you're one of the funniest human beings alive.
Same here, man.
I've enjoyed being a fan of yours, and meeting you is even better. And you're just a man. And thank you for being so hilarious.
Yeah, same here, man.
Yeah, dude, you rule.